And joining us on the book club on Perspectives today is Mara Altman. Mara is the author of the book, Gross Anatomy, Dispatches from the Front and Back. Let me tell you a little bit about Mara. She enjoys writing about issues that embarrass her, e.g. chin hair, because she has found that putting shame on the page diffuses a stigma, leaving her with a sense of empowerment and freedom. Her first book, Thanks for Coming, An Investigation into Love and Orgasm, was translated into 3 languages. She's also the author of 6 best-selling Kindle singles. That's a hard one to say, including Bearded Lady, which has been downloaded over 30,000 times and was chosen as an Amazon short. Her work has appeared in the New York Times, Salon, and New York Magazine, among other publications. Before going freelance, she worked as a staff writer for The Village Voice and daily newspapers in India and Thailand. She is alumna of Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism and currently lives in San Diego with quite a few other hairy beans. Thank you, Mara, for being with us.
It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about, first of all, growing up, were you always interested in kind of writing and being curious about things? I mean, most children are, but I want to hear a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I was always very curious, but I didn't know that it would express itself in writing until I was in my early 20s. So, yeah.
What kind of books did you like to read as a child?
You know, reading was really difficult for me when I was younger, and I had to go to a tutor, and it was kind of wild. And then as I went into high school, I started reading some of the classics as you're, you know, given as homework. But then when I really kind of exploded into a reader was when I discovered Tom Robbins novels, like Another Roadside Attraction and Fierce Invalids from Hot Climates. I realized how fun the written word could be and that you could make things funny and playful. And that really opened me up to wanting to read and even explore the language myself.
Now, your book, Gross Anatomy, Dispatches from the Front and Back, correct me if I'm wrong, the only other person that I think has kind of taken on the body and things that we sometimes don't talk about in a humorous way is perhaps Mary Roach. And In this book, well, first of all, tell me a little bit, how did you decide, what made you want to write about this?
I had a realization that there's so many natural and even essential parts of our bodies that we have so much shame about, and I wanted to find out why. And that really came across when I, with an experience with my body hair and specifically my chin hair, I had these chin hairs and I was so afraid of my husband finding out that I had them that I kind of lived in fear. I was afraid of direct sunlight because of the shimmering effect it causes. I got laser and I would like tear up my laser appointment cards. And to be a complete woman, it felt like I had to get rid of a part of myself. So I wanted, that really sparked the journey. And because I have a journalism background and I am very curious and I like to talk to people and learn from people, it made sense to mix the kind of anecdotal personal struggle and interest with investigating and talking to academics and researchers.
In your book, you talk a little bit about when you were sitting down with some of your friends, and one of your friends made a comment about body hair, and you thought that it was something that it was natural, and so you sort of freaked out because she was freaking out. Tell us about that.
There was a lot of freaking out. It's amazing how many poignant moments in my life I have that have to do with body hair. But yeah, that's another one. I grew up in a household where my mom let her hair, leg hair grow and her armpit hair grow, and they were really into like the being natural, and natural is accepting yourself. So when I finally got into junior high, and it seemed like all of a sudden over summer, like everyone had shaved, I was suddenly, you know, like the sore thumb just sticking out, and it was definitely pointed out to me how gross I was. So that was kind of a moment of reckoning, like, do I stay natural, as my parents said is best, or to fit in, do I do these things that everyone around me is doing? And if they're doing it, like, and I'm going to buy into it, why am I doing it? And so I think that was also a kind of turning point in my life of, like, asking, why do we do these things? Why do we put makeup on? Why do we have these issues with our body, even though, of course, I also have these issues with my body.
And in some cultures, as you write in your book, I mean, it's perfectly natural to not use makeup, to not shave, to not do certain things. But then again, it seems like many times, and especially now with social media, it puts a lot of pressure, and especially on our young girls who are forced or they feel like they have to be a certain way to be accepted.
Yeah, there's a very narrow idea of what's beautiful right now, and it's very hard to fit in that. And so I think women, it's a catch-22 for people right now. I feel like you're kind of shamed if you don't fit in, but then you're shamed again if you try too hard to fit in. You know, if you think about the duck face that women give, it's kind of fitting into the ideal of beauty, but you're also like kind of ridiculed for doing it. The same thing for getting plastic surgery. Like, you're trying to fit into what people think is beautiful, but then people also have a little side eye towards people that go to that extent. It's kind of like you can't win. Whereas you should really be looking at the culture that creates this feeling and doesn't have a very wide spectrum of what's beautiful, when we have a very wide spectrum of people that all look very different and everything is normal and okay.
So what did your mother tell you when you approached her of how you felt and what you thought was going on in school and the way you were brought up by your mom and dad?
Well, I basically, you know, approached her and told her that I wanted to shave because it's just too much to face that kind of, well, for me, it was too much. And I wanted to fit in, and her and my dad were disappointed. But they also understood the situation I was facing. And it was very funny because my mom had no idea how to shave legs. Like, we went and we got a razor. She went to the bathroom with me. I was like 13 or 14. And we're like, how do you do it? And she's like, I don't know. I guess you just like move it up your leg. And I was like, okay. It was just ridiculous, you know?
When I read that part in the book, I was imagining that and I was going, wow, you know, this must have been pretty interesting. I guess like for me, when my father taught me how to shave, you know, do it this way, but make sure that you don't take half your cheek off when you're doing it.
And,
but it's something that I'm sure that you, Mara, felt like you needed to do, again, to be accepted by your friends, because girls can be pretty mean, especially in middle school.
Yeah, I really did want to be accepted, and it did compel me to take on shaving, and it, you know, I still have, or there was a lot of shame around hair in general. Like when the chin hairs were discovered, I was pretty horrified, and I would do, again, all these things kind of in shame and behind closed doors. And after doing all this research and finding out that, you know, out of the 20 people that I interviewed, like 13 of them also had a chin hair. And not only did they have the chin hair, but they had the same like nightmare scenario as I had, where they somehow get into a coma and then there's no one there at the hospital to pluck them. So they've each appointed like an emergency contact plucker to come just in case that happens, you know, like they have a sister or a friend. It's just this shared experience that women have. And so that really relieved a lot of the shame I felt. And now I still do those things. Like, I don't want to grow out my little, you know, goatee, but I don't live with that same anxiety and fear of being found out. I do it because it's how I want to present myself to the world. And yes, that aligns with beauty standards because it's really hard to shake that. But at least I'm focusing on my life in the present and not putting so much energy towards hiding these things.
We are visiting with Mara Altman. She is the author of the book, Gross Anatomy, Dispatches from the Front and Back. Now, you mentioned at the beginning of the interview that you felt like you were holding back a state secret from your fiancé about the chin hair. But once it came out, it was exposed, everything turned out okay.
Yeah, it did. I spent all these months talking to, you know, anthropologists, evolutionary theorists, different waxers, and just everything you could think of related to hair. And then I finally go and I approach him. I'm like, I'm going to tell him everything. I'm just going to lay it bare and let him judge how he wants to judge. I'm just like, babe, And I just love to tell him the whole story. He looks over at me. He's like, it's just hair. And then he turns back to watch the TV. It was ridiculous. You know, after all this fear, this was not a big deal to him at all.
And to you, it was like the Mueller investigation.
Yeah, it was exactly. It felt just huge. And I think that's also telling that we put this a lot on ourselves. And it's something that I had to come to terms with on my own. It wasn't that, you know, I think if I told him at the beginning, I also wouldn't feel the same release as I did just by going through the whole process of talking to people and understanding that it's a natural thing.
One of the Kindle singles that I mentioned earlier that you wrote is called Bearded Lady. Tell us about this.
So this is a essay that did really, really well, and it was included in the collection. So that's one of the first essay in the book. And then I go on to explore things like vaginal scent and sweat and sex sounds and camel toe and anuses and warts, all these things. And I do it in a similar way where I look at what is the issue? What is the struggle? What is the rub? And then I go and I talk to tons of experts and try to understand where the feelings came from and what this body part actually does for us.
You know, one of the videos that I showed my class one time about advertising and commercials and target audiences, one of the things that they were advertising was deodorant for women. But they could not say armpit. It was very offensive to say it back then. So they would say something like, within the curve of a woman is this era. And so that was talking about, you know, it's okay, and you know, women do sweat like men. So that's one of the things that you address as well in your book. And that's a great question. How sweaty is sweaty?
Oh, that's, you know, to each person is their own kind of judge of what's too sweaty. I'm a big sweater. And so, like, I'm used to going around in tennis shoes just so that I look like I may have gone for a run. You know, and people can kind of be like, oh, yeah, you just went for a run, because people are always trying to figure out why you're sweating. It's a good excuse. But I pick out clothes just so that it won't show the sweat pit stain. And right now I definitely have it with the interview, you know. But sweat is so interesting because it can mean so many different things. You know, it can mean you're sick or you're anxious or embarrassed or turned on. And so I think, you know, people look a lot to context when you're sweating, and they usually think that something kind of bad, like you're either ill or nervous. And one of my favorite parts about that chapter, well, I have two favorite parts. One was looking into the anthropology, the evolution of sweating and why it's so important. It was such a pivotal moment in our evolution was when we started sweating and we started being able to do something. Daniel Lieberman at Harvard, a paleoanthropologist, thinks that we started being able to persistence hunt, which means that we could be out during the middle of the day because we could sweat and let off heat, whereas other mammals can just pant. And you can't, like, pant and run very well at the same time. So during the midday, the other mammals would rest, but then we would run after the animals, and they would overheat and die. And then we started having, like, a regular access to meat. So that's a huge time. A lot of change happens when we start being able to eat meat. And then also, another woman, Jamie Goldenberg, has a theory that we're kind of repulsed by sweat. And the thing about the anthropology was I was able to kind of go, you know, this is when you see sweat pit, like sweat stains, they're our legacy. This is amazing. This is what makes us human, part of what makes us human. It's great. If we didn't have it, we would die in like 20 minutes of hypothermia on a hot day. But why we're repulsed, there was a theory from Jamie Goldenberg who says that we try and cover up everything that is most beast-like about us because it moves us farther away from being animals and the idea that we're mortals and can die. So we cover up our what we excrete and that we're moist and that we're hairy, all of these things. I found that very fascinating.
Mira, did you find out that perhaps through your research also that because of what you just mentioned, it's also not, I can't think of the word right now, but we used to see pictures of sweaty men on covers of magazines or on advertising commercials, or a sweaty woman who just finished, you know, working out. But now it's like everybody has to look their best. And as far as shaving, you see a lot of men who look like they have a, you know, 2-day growth, which that's the way they intended to look.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're all just like, you know, it's trends, like the Brazilian, and now I hear the Bush is coming back, and, you know, they're just all just more beauty standards, which aren't necessarily bad. I think it's pretty natural for humans to have these things. It's just nice if there didn't have to be so much shame and anxiety about them, like behind the scenes of not fitting in.
We're visiting with Mara Altman. She is the author of the book Gross Anatomy, Dispatches from the Front and Back. Now, Mara, you also have some very interesting drawings, cartoons that you have in your book. Tell us a little bit about those.
Oh, yeah. I just felt like it was another way to express the ideas in the book. I had a lot of fun drawing them. They're just like another kind of angle to look at the material. I also made some book trailers for the book that are pretty, I think, pretty funny. And they explore things like vaginal scent and camel toe. And there's one about sweat and pimple popping. And it's more in like a little short story. So I just think it's really fun to get to explore all these ideas with different media. And that was part of putting it in there. People seem to be really enjoying those little drawings.
Now,
great.
Because of social media, it's given us a little bit of an access to more information, to more pictures, to more conversations. And YouTube is definitely one that has really taken off. So that has helped you, I'm sure, in not just promoting your book, but also some of your ideas and some of your analogies.
Yeah, I mean, tapping into what people are thinking about and feeling, it's great. And the internet is great to get in touch, like, you know, it's how I've gotten in touch with a lot of the academics and people that I studied. I was able to read a lot of their research papers before reaching out. Putting my own videos up on YouTube, which will hopefully attract many viewers. It's great. Yeah.
One of the things that you talk about in your book as well is PMS. And one of the chapters, I think it's that chapter, and it talks a little bit about the analyst, Karen Horney, who theorized that a woman had PMS because of the denial of her desire to have children.
Yeah, I think that PMS is one of my favorite chapters. It just shows how we've reinterpreted these symptoms over the years. PMS wasn't even like a term people used until like the 1950s, 40s, 50s. So it's a very new idea. But there's always been kind of, for many years, there's been an idea that there's symptoms that happen to women during their premenstrual time. But recently, it's really metamorphosed into something that's, you know, people discount women's opinions and feelings when they're premenstrual, as if they turn into a totally different being, like an angry being. When I was able to talk to these really fascinating researchers who kind of reframed PMS, and they see it more as a time in our lives where we can be more in touch with our feelings and what's angering us, but in a powerful way, that they're not to be discounted, not emotions to be thrown out because, you know, they're fake, but they're really real, and they inform us about what we care about. And I think that's it shows the misogyny, I guess, that during a certain time of the month, people are just like, oh, she's a bee, you know, when really it's just being more kind of empowered to say the things that you want to say.
In that chapter, you also write about sitting down and discussing this with your parents, and your mom talks about how she refused to take my doll sometimes, but when she did, it worked.
Yeah, that was really interesting. My parents have this, you know, a dynamic around her PMS that happened before she had a hysterectomy, and I had been brought up kind of with them saying, you know, during when they thought I was having PMS, have a Midol, you know, you'll feel better. And I kind of raged against it. I felt like they were trying to quiet me. And my mom felt like my father was trying to quiet her back when she would take a Midol, but she would do it and kind of buy into it. And then as I got older, instead of being against it, I started seeing myself using PMS as an excuse, like talking to my friends and saying, oh, it's such a horrible day. It's because I'm PMSing, or I want to kill everyone. It's PMS, you know, we're putting it on ourselves. We're scapegoating our emotions. And I really like this new way of thinking about it, that it's what when women's genders professor said, Joan Chrysler, she said, you know, hormones don't make emotions, but they can exacerbate them. And I think that's really, it's true. It's really informative to see what you might get, what you might feel very passionate about during that time of the month.
I used to kid around with my family sometimes that when we were kids that we all had PMS, poor Mexican syndrome. But that was something that my father said, let's not talk about that. Okay.
A different syndrome.
Tell me a little bit about, because this book, as I mentioned, is everything from the front and the back, great cartoons, as I love. In fact, you have the dancing showgirls from My Doll in that chapter on PMS.
Yes.
Was there a topic, Mara, that as you explored and talked to these experts and to, you know, normal people, regular people who go through these things all the time, fears, phobias, is there something that you felt that perhaps you heard, they told you about, but you couldn't write about it?
No, I felt like I put everything down. I felt really comfortable with putting everything down, and I feel like things are only taboo because we don't talk about them. So, time to talk about them.
And as far as what you talked about, I guess it varies from society to society, and even here in the United States, from culture to culture, from region to region.
Yeah, it does vary. It vary. And when you think about the PMS, like a lot of other cultures don't recognize there being any mood shift during the premenstrual time. But in the Western culture, we do recognize that and feel that, which is really fascinating.
When you were talking earlier in the program about the fact about facial hair and you had chin hair and the fact that, you know, you thought it was horrible when you were brought up that it was just normal, I'm thinking in this day and age where everybody has a tattoo now, it used to be where only certain people got tattoos and now everybody has one.
Mm-hmm.
So is this kind of like something that perhaps we just accept as the time changes? Like your mom and dad, they grew up in the 60s and in the 70s, so they had their certain beliefs and they passed some of those on to you. But then you grew up in a different era also, so the people that you hung around with were saying, this is very different, Mara.
I think things will definitely shift over time and trends shift. But I guess the most important thing is, you know, we can do things and fall in line with the trends, and I think that's all great, and it's great if it makes you feel good. But it's not good if you feel anxiety about it and shame about it. So, you know, if society turns into one where it's stylish to show our chin hairs, then that's, you know, that's great. But I think it's a different thing from just letting go of the shame and, yeah, the idea of what, like, that there's a certain aspect of beauty. Because that would be just like a new beauty standard. It would be like all the women that didn't have chin hair would be like, oh, I need to get a hair implant on my chin.
One of the things that you mentioned in your book as well is when you're talking about children. And I like the part about when you were at the grocery store and the Triscuits, and you told your mom they're only $2.95. So your mom would say something about children when something would be observed in a store. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I was not pregnant at the beginning of the book, and I didn't know if I wanted to have kids. And my mom always thought I would really enjoy it, and I think even more so she thought she would enjoy being a grandma to my kids. And whenever something would happen that looked unappealing with little kids around, she'd be like, it's different when they're your own. And it was kind of her chant to get me to get pregnant. But of course, you can't understand that until it is your own, which is, you know, then it's too late to go back. But I did end up getting pregnant actually during the reporting and writing of the book. And I now have twins. So
wow.
I went from zero to two.
So the Triscuits were buy one, get one free.
Exactly. And I have to say, it's different when they're your own.
It is very different, yes.
It is. It's so different.
So you had a, it sounds like you had a good relationship with your mom and your dad, and this book you dedicate to your mom. After this book was written and some of the essays that you've written, tell us a little bit about how that perhaps has affected your relationship with your mom.
It's been a really wonderful ride because she also is kind of takes a first look a lot of times at my work. So she was the first to read many of the chapters, and she allows me to write her how I want to. She's not very critical, you know. She knows that I see her through my own lens. So that freedom is amazing. And she also says that she learned a lot from the book, like the PMS chapter. She kind of went back and reframed her whole way of seeing the interactions she had with my dad around PMS. So we both learned together. And at the end, I went to a nudist resort with her. She was so kind and generous to come with me because I felt like it would be the perfect kind of culmination after looking at all these little parts of our bodies. We were going to look at the human body holistically and naked together. And she's actually on book tour with me. Today is the first day of the book tour, and she's coming along, and it's just been so sweet.
What a great mom you have.
She's a great mom.
So what's next for Mara Altman?
This book took so long to write and get out, and I'm so excited about it that I'm just going to keep sharing it with people. I'm really excited. I think, you know, I went in really curious and wanting to investigate why we feel the way we feel. And I came out with this bonus of having people really respond positively toward it. It comes out today. Today is the launch day, but I've had a lot of responses already from the advanced reading copies. So I'm just excited to spread the word as far as I can.
Well, we're so glad you took the time to be with us. And now that you have twins, you can read them a bedtime story. The Three Little Pigs comes to mind, not by the hair of my chin, me chin, chin.
I got to get that one. You're right.
Mara, if people want to find out a little bit more about you, do you have a Facebook page or do you have a specific webpage that they should go to?
I have a webpage at mara-altman.com, and I love hearing people's own stories and reactions to the work. And I have Twitter at Mara Altman and Instagram at Mara Altman. So I'd be happy to correspond with anyone. And yeah, and then there's those videos to share, which are, as I said, quite funny.
Yes, they are. Well, anyway, again, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today. And congratulations on your book, and enjoy the trip with your mom.
Thank you so much for having me. And thanks for the very thoughtful questions.
You're welcome. We've been visiting with Mara Altman. The name of the book is Gross Anatomy, Dispatches from the Front and Back. The Book Club on Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to The Book Club on Perspectives. I'm Louis Sainz.